Hello, everyone, and welcome to Consumers, Cars, Tech Talk, and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. I am honored to have on today's episode children's author Natalie Reeves Billing. And I am so excited to have her on today's podcast. She has written some very interesting children's books that I would like everyone to know about. And I'd like to have everyone get to know her as an author and some of the other things that she's done. So without further ado, today's guest is Natalie Reeves Billing. So Natalie, welcome to the show today. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm really very happy to be here.
Thank you for coming on. Well, first of all, Natalie, I want you to tell us a little bit about your background, your childhood, your schooling, your career, and what inspired you to become a children's book author.
Okay. I grew up in an area called in Liverpool, and many people believe that that area of Liverpool is for those who would probably not aspire to be much more than menial in their roles in the world. And I very much did that because the people of Liverpool are very, very creative, but often don't have the S that other people do to services and education, after school services and that sort of thing. So I was really with that story that people believed about the people of Liverpool and what they could be. Some of the most amazing people have come from my city, and so I knew that it was past the breakthrough. I went to school in a very good school, really. I grew on merit, but I got into a band and decided to go down that route rather than go to university, much to my mum's despair. And I decided to go into a sign ring band and actually went to California for 3 years. So that was lovely to hear that you were over. So my world took me and my songwriting to America and across Europe. And I had so much fun being part of that outfit and came back to the UK. I decided that it wasn't music that really, truly got me inspired. It was the songwriting itself and therefore rewriting that really got me. That was where my heart was. I'd always thought it was the performance and the facade of being someone else and pretending to be this person, amazing, confident person, but in actual fact, the process of writing and creative journey was the thing that really sparked my interest. And once I had a family of my own, stories began to show up in at bedtime and at time and all those usual things. And very soon after, I started to write books.
Wow, what an interesting beginning. So you went from music to writing. And for me, I guess one of the most fascinating things about that is you are, and for all intents and purposes, you are a creative person. So you've been able to show that creative side through different outlets. And now you found it through reading, or rather writing, I meant to say. So in terms of writing, what do you find most fascinating and most enjoyable about the process of writing, and especially for kids too?
Well, for me, I've always struggled with who I am, what do I want, and all those fundamental questions that we ask ourselves throughout our lives. So I was very arriving at what it was that made me really tick. And I found that was through writing as a form of catharsis. I found that life coach, all those other things that I was doing to try to find myself, really didn't compare to the process of putting my words down on paper and collecting my thoughts in that way. So once I discovered myself through writing, I realized what an amazing escape it was to be able to go to this space in my mind and go there without restriction. So especially at times like this, I feel as if it's even more important for us to create the worlds that we can go into to save ourselves, if you like, to be peaceful, to be balanced, to, you know, to find inspiration and to keep us, I think, for families and for children alike, go into that imagination in our head is a beautiful thing.
I find that absolutely, totally relatable on a personal level. I was an English major in college as an undergrad, and my emphasis of study was creative writing. And so ever since I was in high school, I had a love of writing and in high school and in college. I did a lot of personal poetry writing, and then I did some short stories in my classes as well. And I always, like you, I found it cathartic to get my personal experiences out on paper. You go over them in your head, and then you put them down on paper, and it makes such a difference to get those feelings and emotions out that way. So I find that absolutely, totally relatable. So I understand what you mean by that. And I would imagine now, during this whole COVID-19 situation that the whole world's been going through, that especially has been helpful for you and your family as well.
Yes, I think for me, I have a very noisy head. I have so many ideas floating around in my head, and it can feel quite overwhelming as to which thread of thought I should pick up at any given time. And so when I put it all down on paper and even read it out loud to myself, that's when that voice, that focus kind of becomes real and separates itself, the echo chamber of other voices that are in there telling you to do mundane things like, you know, go and have some water to drink, or why don't you go and do some exercises now, or why don't you call your uncle from, you haven't called him for 2 weeks, and all those distracting thoughts that you have. And they all have this, but I guess that writing them down and writing your thoughts down and your feelings down help you sort of order to them as well.
Now, in terms of you and your family, what has been the most challenging aspect of the whole COVID-19 situation? I know over here, especially in California, we've just been imposed with another curfew. Our curfew started yesterday, and it's from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. You're not supposed to go out and do non-essential things. So you can still go out and do things that are important, but we've been imposed with yet another semi-mini lockdown, if you will. But during the day, things are pretty much kind of business as usual. I mean, we have our restrictions and such that we've had, and in my part of the state, and that's, which includes 94% of the state at this moment, we're in something called a purple tier, where gyms and restaurants have to move, I think generally outdoors, which they have been doing mostly, but they were allowed to take some of their business indoors. Now it's outdoors again. So that's caused a lot of challenges for people. And we've had a lot of businesses go out of business because they've been locked down for so long and been not allowed to open. And we've lost a lot of businesses that won't come back. So for you living where you are, what do you find are like the biggest challenges for you, not only for you, but for people in general?
Well, here we've gone into what we call tier three, which is a full nationwide shutdown, which is pretty much like first lockdown. We're on the second now. But with me being in the north, we have very high incidence of COVID-19. And we have our first citywide testing facility where you can instantaneously know the results within a few minutes. That's helped us to sort of, plan our lives around those testes, that we can go and see a friend if we've just had a test literally, you know, within that half hour. But for me, during the whole experience, I'd say that the first part of it was the most daunting. I was just trying to figure out how my new life made sense with the children home, not at school, and juggling a new business and marriage and all the other crazy responsibilities anyway in our normal lives. And I noticed that actually I was a very catalyzed sort of person. And what I mean by that is I'm so used to having a time and a place for things that once, you know, everything was happening at once, I was really very overwhelmed by that. But funnily enough, I guess I found myself and I had quite an epiphany. Those things can actually happen at the same time. I'd never really faced that. I'd always reeled with changing heads from one mode to the next. But when you're faced with, you know, two and the necessity of just having to find a way, I was able to weave my family life into my work a lot more without feeling so guilty or, you know, isolated. There for me, fortunately enough, as a children's author, to bring my family into a lot of what I do, including packing up the envelopes ready to go to customers. So they're finding out how to be entrepreneur. You know, they're seeing the joy that, you know, adults get from achievement and things like very positive. And also they're getting to see first drafts of my book, and, you know, even star in my YouTube videos. So I guess in a way it's allowed me to be more authentic and to own being all the different things that we are instead of a fragmented sort of being. I'm a full, complex individual with all the authenticity that goes with that.
My next question for you, and I think listeners will really get a kick out of this too, is I want you to tell us about your Monstrous Me series. you have My Mummy is a Monster and my Daddy is a Monster. And tell us about those books, the inspiration behind them, and if your own kids have had a chance to read them and what they think about them and what your overarching message is for these books.
Okay, so I did have the idea just before lockdown, but I realize now only half the idea. I'd had this idea about a monster that lives in us all that shows every now and again when we get angry or, you know, agitated. And I thought it's an interesting concept of the mask that we put on. And I chose to do it in a very fun, supported way, so that the children don't realize that, you know, there is a message to be learned, although there is one. But it only really came into its own when I was having a heated debate, 6-year-old daughter. And she said, Mom, do you know that you're always saying that there are two sides to every story? But as I can see, there's only ever one, yours. And you know, I would have been angry apart from I thought, whoa, okay, that isn't, I need to write that down. And then I thought, okay, wouldn't it be interesting if there was a book that told both sides of the story at the same time, the very same scenarios? So I thought, okay, I'll have it through my daughter's eyes and then I'll flip it and see what I think of them daily dramas. And more so than that, I thought, wouldn't it be great if I flip the book in the midpoint, so, you know, it literally flips the narrative on its head. And so I did two covers for the book, and when you get to the midsection and you've heard about the tales of woe coming from a child's point of view, then it asks you to close your book and give it a flip and see what mummy or daddy or the dog or the teachers have about this, and then you get somebody else's side of the story. And I just think that that's a great way to illustrate children that, you know, the story is often somewhere in the middle.
Now, have your kids had a chance to read the books? And what do they think about your books?
Well, funnily enough, they didn't recognize themselves in it. And I found that really funny. You know, they totally didn't get how monstrous they are, that, you know, that oblivious children are sometimes to the dramas they create in our lives. And totally didn't want it to be about blame, I guess. I wanted it to be an active experience of reading. So whereas usually you sit down and you get kind of the book and you can even drift off and not really give it much thought, here you have to be present in the room. So my children like that aspect of the book reading, because it kind of is a debate there and then. So you can't zone out, you can't fidget with gadgets, you can't think, what next, and start writing a to-do list while the kids are reading. You have to be in the same room, answering all their questions, being accused of being a monster. And it's awfully playful, but it's poignant at the same time.
Absolutely. And I was looking at the just overwhelmingly positive reviews you've got on Amazon for My Mummy is a Monster. And people are really relating and enjoying the book. So that's a major kudos for you for putting out such a thoughtful and insightful book, not only for kids, but for their parents too.
Thank you. I also really wanted to focus on extra activity to accompany the books, especially now when people are, you know, struggling financially. I wanted activities that were inexpensive. And so I developed a range of paper crafts where children can download in white or color, depending on their situation, the characters from the books and the scenes and all the accessories and things like that, so that they can actually make the monsters and build a home with just some scissors and glue. And it is a really lovely process. It's so peaceful and calm to just make those little origami paper crafts. And they seem to be doing really well at the moment.
That's awesome. That's terrific. Well, Natalie, we're going to take our first break, but we will be right back. And I'm going to ask you about some other books that you've written. And I can't wait to continue the conversation. So we will be right back with more Consumers, Cars, Tech Talk, and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. And my guest is Natalie Reeves Billing. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to More Consumers, Cars, Tech Talk, and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. My guest today is Natalie Reeves Billing. She's an author, and she's written some very interesting children's books. And Natalie, I want to ask you now about some other books you've written, Ben and the Bug, and this was a group writer, so group of writers for Winter Chills and Ghostly Tales for Cold Nights. So talk a little bit about those books and what you were going for with the themes in those particular books.
Okay, so Bug, that just came to me at the very start of COVID-19, out the first lockdown. I was in the middle of a deadline for my first monstrous book, but I knew that I also had to release this book at the same time. I had the poem, The Owl and the Pussycat, going around in my head. And I thought, what a beautiful rhyme. And I wrote my poem, if you like, to that sort of pattern. And it just sort of wrote itself. And the idea of it is to give the bug or COVID-19 a face. You know, at the time, most families were very worried about how the world would look for them and children when the school returned. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of fear and worry about that. And worry, there was a lot of unanswered questions. I guess there still are. And I thought, for our youngest members, you know, of society, our 3-year-olds, 4 or 5, there is only so much that they can actually do. I wanted to concentrate on those things that they can actually do, and the rest of it be playful with. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do a fictitious journey between a little boy called and his friend Bug. So he met the bug at the play park, and it talks about they had that the bug doesn't know that he's harming anyone. It's just what bugs do. And that shows, did you know, boxes, small, very clear and precise facts of what children can do to stay safe. So there's no fear mongering. It's very clear and precise. And it's also very playful. There are lots of bugs on the page that you can splat by pointing at them. And I just thought, concentrate on the joy of childhood, if you like, and just enough to feel safe out there in the world and to make families feel comforted as well. So that. And Winter Chills, that was a joy, really, because I got to book with my friends, which is always the best way, really. There was a bunch of us in community on Twitter, and we had common interests, which in this case was the supernatural stories, which is my secret love. And I always found myself in castles or creepy churchyards or something like that, whether in my writing or in the real world. So it was a great opportunity for me to go there and explore that sort of place. And it was beautiful to do. So that before lockdown, when the world was just a little bit different, and I was able to go out there and market it in a unique fashion, dressed up, doing all sorts of pranks, getting my book in front of this place and that place. It was a lot of fun. And after that, all the other book launches have been more or less virtual.
That must be a totally different experience too, having your book launches being all virtual. What has that experience been like for you?
At first it was what I would say underwhelming, because I use over so much. That's one of my buzzwords. So here I would say underwhelming, because you have all these ideas and expectations, and you know, in the real world you'd be celebrating with the people you love, and they'd be helping you to bring in the fruits of your labors, if you like. I remember the first one, I was sat on my own singing my book for my mummyism. So I was dressed as an orange monster, singing along on my own. I had a little glass of wine to celebrate, and I thought, oh my goodness, how sad am I?
That, to me, this whole COVID situation has been really just interesting. I work in education, and so I've had the opportunity to work with lots of kids who have been affected by this, of course. And it's been quite interesting to see just how different life has been for them and their families as well. So it's just been quite the interesting experience to see that.
Yeah, I find it lonely, if you will, at first, because I'm a very sociable person and I'm a very tactile person. And I really hope that we'll be able to go back to some sort of closeness again, because I do. I miss being close to people. I miss giving them a hug. I miss all of those things. And I hope that one day we'll be able to do those things again without feeling so conscious. I've just noticed that nowadays, when I see things on the TV, even, you know, you see people on, you know, footage from a year ago, and you see big crowds and you think, wow, how close are they? Wow, you know, why are they so close to each other? Oh, he's just blown his on a handkerchief and put it in his pocket. Ew, you know, I've noticed that a lot. And I just hope that at the end of this, we can slowly but surely go back to being close and connected again, and fully done with the idea of not being able to give people a hug and lean into them and all those really, really miss about the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found during this whole thing, I mean, it was always natural for me to shake someone's hand, but you take that for granted. You can't do that now. It's just like a distant wave or maybe a fist bump every now and then. But other than that, you can't do that anymore, at least for now. And I'm like you, I'm in the camp where I'm hoping that things change sooner than later, and that we can kind of get to some kind of normalcy again, back to the way things used to be, because it's really strange. Like when I'm working with my students, they're sitting behind plexiglass and I'm sitting behind plexiglass, and there's like this distant kind of coldness about that, and not used to that after spending a lifetime of working with students and just being out there and being able to communicate openly. Being behind plexiglass is not very pleasant. So I can only imagine what small kids are feeling like too, going through all this, and the older kids too, because it's just quite a strange, unique experience to go through. But I think this is something that we'll look back on years from now and just kind of go, whoa. I mean, I can't believe things actually turned from the way it was to the way it turned into. And I think we'll be more appreciative when we come on the other side of this and see how life really was during this time, because this has been quite an interesting and unnerving at times period of time for, I'm sure, everyone. And I know it has been for people across the pond too, and all over the world.
Yes, I think therapists and counselors had a huge wave of people who are coming in with hug deprivation. I can definitely see that.
Oh yeah, I can just imagine. Now, I wanted to ask you about other projects that you're involved in too. You seem to be quite an inspiring person from my point of view. So tell us about some of your other projects that you have been involved with and that you're involved with right now.
Okay, so in Liverpool right now, we have 3 years of Lily, and what it looks at is reading, writing, and oracy. And I sit on the committee for that, planning events around those things. Helping with ideas for fundraising and how we're going to access children who are in under areas, and how they will keep up with the curriculum when they don't have the same level of tech. So we're doing all sorts of things, liaising with private firms like construction firms, you know, literacy trusts to get things that we need, resources, that sort of thing, to reach out to those people, especially when schools close. And also I have a social enterprise called Split Perspectives. As you've guessed, perspective and meat is one of the things that, you know, I'm very passionate about the power of storytelling and how you can frame a story to kind of illustrate lots of different points, you know, influence people's thoughts from a very young age, get them to think about things from other people and other perspectives and strange narratives and alternative sort of viewpoints. So with that enterprise, as well as using my books as tools in that, I'm also going to be developing Split Perspective books away from the Monstrous Me collection. So I'll be looking at like split perspectives of socioeconomics and cultural backgrounds, you know, alternative family structures and that sort of thing. So I think that that device will really work, but, you know, much more interesting and, you know, much needed picks.
Mm-hmm. Now, my next question for you, and this is something that's been very near and dear to me, and it's been something that I've been asking my other guests that I've had on the podcast. For you, what is the importance of being a positive role model and a positive female role model too? And also, what is your message for other aspiring writers?
Well, for me, positivity and powering through and brilliant has meant that it's saved me in a way. Through the pandemic, I've found strength that I had just by making myself do the work and making it become a routine, putting on a happy face in the morning, even if my heart is feeling rather low. I've had my morning coffee. If I keep my facade on, it will become reality. And all actions I will have after that will be positive ones. And, you know, giving yourself the time to be honest about things that have faltered or are not going well, that's fine to voice them, get them out. But as long as we can leave them there and jump back on the positivity train, that's what keeps good things coming back to us. And when people see us in that way, expect that from us, it keeps us on that track. It's harder to fall off the positive thing when people are expecting so much from you and you don't want to let them down. And it keeps you alive yourself. There's a joy that comes from being that sort of person to others. So my advice for anybody would be, yes, to own the fear and that we feel and talk about it and write it down and have that friend that you talk to about it, being able to put it away and to power on. And before you know it, things do come to your life that move you out of that state into a new state, a lighter state and a positive state. And that's how we move forward, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any, and even from childhood and up until now, have you had any people that inspired you, whether it be female or male, that were role models for you to pursue your dreams and to do the things that you're doing currently?
I did. I had, in my very early years, I had a singing teacher who I was absolutely fascinated by how she managed to do all of these different things, what sort of energy she had around her. She was absolutely magnetic. She just held the room. She was a beacon of confidence and joy. I really wanted to know how that happens. And I guess there's a bit of not seeing the victim, which I did up until my mid-20s. I did see myself as a sad case. It took me a long time to realize, you know, what potential I had. And my best friend as well, she has been a constant in my life, and she's talented and so wise. But when I talk about wisdom, it's a spiritual wisdom that she has, this ability to just understand what life is and what its priorities are. And I always know when I'm on the right track, because if they're around me smiling and interacting with me and keeping me going and, you know, egging on and encouraging me, then I know that if she's on my side, then I've got it right. But if she starts back and I don't know about that, then I know straight away, okay, there's something not quite here. So I guess she's helped me to find that inner voice and take it seriously and to learn to listen to.
And it's always important to have people like that in your life too. People like that you can fall back on and you can trust their advice or their gut feeling, if you will, that they have about life and things. So that's pretty awesome that you have that. Now I want to, before we complete our interview, I have a couple more questions for you, Natalie. So we're going to take one more quick break and we will be right back for more Consumers, Cars, Tech Talk and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. And we'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to More Consumers, Cars, Tech Talk, and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. And my guest today is author Natalie Reeves Billing. So my next question to you, Natalie, is what does the holiday season mean to you? This is a kind of an important time of year. And what do the holidays mean to you? And what do you think it means to your family as well? This is a question that I've been wanting to ask my other guests, but you're the first one I'm going to ask this question to. So what do the holidays mean to you and your family?
Well, for me, we are a very ritualistic family, and we have rituals and, you know, events and things that we do here, which we acknowledge every time, regardless how bad things are, how trying are. We always have that stability of knowing where we are in the year. And Chris, obviously the highlight of that. So we do take a week beforehand, wind away from work and start closing down all of the business side of things so that we get to that place where there is a guilt-free element of being, you know, sedate and rested and, you know, your mind's not in work. So we do have that sort of transitional phase. And then after that, once we're nulling against ourselves, and we're getting used to not being with tech for a bit, then we can truly immerse ourselves in Christmas. And Christmas for us, all the things that we collect as a family, we have rituals of buying baubles, places we visit. So we get all our baubles out and we get all of our Christmas decorations. We have family members and keepsakes, and we talk about them, about when we got them, gave it to us, and why they gave it to us, and what was the message of that. And so we, all of those beautiful things are all, you know, around the room smiling back at us. It kind of feels like everyone's there with us, and we are very keen to those memories alive of past Christmases and, you know, people that have passed. A beautiful time. So yes, we're massive collectors and really into our rich the minute.
That's awesome. And especially, like you said, during times like this, it's important to have those traditions and those things that you share with family that you can keep going. And that brings a sense of normalcy to your life as well, I'm sure. Quickly tell us, what are the ages of your kids again?
My children are 8 and 7.
And what have you found for your kids? What do they enjoy most about the holidays?
Well, my daughter, she likes magic. She likes thinking that there are things happening in the world that nobody explain. And, you know, the fact that everybody is giving out joy, and told her that when people are giving out their best selves, that there's a magic that comes with that. So she, little stories about that magic, that she can tap into this energy that people are giving out and do all sorts of things. So she loves that, the magic, that the atmosphere of Christmas, if you like, that feeling in your heart and glow. She's all about that. Whereas my son is more logical in his mind. So he starts to figure out, you know, is this dude really going to come down that tiny little chimney stack? I don't know how he's going to do that. How does he keep his red outfit nice and clean and all those sorts of things? And so he pisses on things like, he doesn't like to be without a routine. That's the thing. And so when he's at school, when he's not at school, we still need to instill some sort of routine in him because he doesn't know what to do. He still needs a regiment. So we have a Christmas plan for him. He has a Christmas regimen.
Wow. Yeah, kids are really fascinating. They're all different. And some kids, like you said, some kids need that routine. A lot of kids just or more comfortable when they have that routine. And a lot of adults don't really think about that. And especially people who have kids or have worked with kids appreciate just how much kids need a routine, because it makes them have a sense of safety with them as well. So that makes a huge difference. Now, speaking of kids, what would you, if you had the opportunity to talk to your younger self, what advice would you give your younger self?
I would tell that, you know, all the things that I found amazing about the people around me that I thought was impossible for me, was just a matter of events, and that anything is possible if you put your mind to it. A lot of people get there with talent alone, but with talent and with effort, you can achieve anything you want. I think people often underestimate effort. You can achieve some life from effort alone if you're willing to do the work. And so I would probably tell myself, and also that family, because my family is quite small. When I was young, our family was very small. There weren't a lot of members in it, and I grew up without a dad. And I would tell myself that the people around me, they might not necessarily be related by blood, they're giving things to me like emotional support and love, then they are all just as important as my blood relatives, and they are just as much family as them as well.
Profound words indeed, Natalie. Now tell us quickly before we go, what are some things that you're doing that may be coming out in the future that you can tell us about? What projects are you looking forward to coming out in the relatively near future or within the next year or so?
Okay, so my next book comes out at the end of January, which is My Brother, My Monster. And then it will be My Teachers Are Monsters before the end of the year. And we also have some creativity boxes, which we call Build a Book, our book. And what they are is basically boxes that look like toolboxes, contain books and paper crafts that go out to houses in underfunded areas, children to be able to read a book and then literally bring it to life by making the character, putting them into the box in a sort of puppet show display. So I can't wait to get that started and to go out into the community again and actually see, you know, the fruits of it all, the faces and the smiles, and to watch it grow. So I'm really excited about this coming year.
Oh, those sound like some wonderful projects. And I want to have you back on again after I've had a chance to read all of the monstrous books in that series. And I just want to give you my feedback on them and share it with our listeners. So it'd be great to have you back on. Before you go, also, I'd like you to, if you want to give us your website and your Instagram and other social media sites that people can find you on, just tell our listeners about those.
Okay, so pick me on my homepage, which is www.natalierevesbilling.com, or they can connect with me on Twitter, where I'm at billingreeves, or you can get me on Facebook, which is at Natalie R. Author.
And I will have all of those links posted on the show webpage on the Anchor FM website for the show. So I'll make sure to put those sites in the show notes. So Natalie, thank you so very much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. You're a fascinating guest. And like I said, it'd be wonderful to have you on again in the future when you have some time. And thank you again for coming on. You have quite an interesting story, and your books are fascinating. And I know parents and especially kids will love reading your books. So thank you so much today for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for your kind words, and I can't wait to talk.
Thank you, Natalie. Well, that is it for today. thank you so much, everyone, for listening to today's episode of Consumers, Cars, TikTok, and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. Again, my guest was author Natalie Reeves Billing. So do visit Amazon, especially pick up her book. You can order it digitally as an ebook as well. So take a look at her books and do take the time. It's worth the time and effort. So Natalie, again, thank you so much for being on. This is Consumers. Oh, you're very welcome. This is Consumers, Cars, Tech Talk, and More with me, your host, Phil Scott. Everyone be safe. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. And we'll talk again soon. Until next time, everybody. Bye-bye.